Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll have Corey Curtis from News 2 joining the show at 8 o'clock. Darren McFarlane, host of Darren Donica Chase, that you can hear weekdays from 10 to 2 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He'll join us at 9 o'clock to get into the latest with the Nashville Predators. The Preds back in a playoff spot after a big weekend in Chicago. We'll get more into that coming up here throughout the show today. So going back to our conversation in the last segment, Buck and Gator on YouTube says, "No way Stillman isn't gassed from the introductions. My money is on Rex Road all night in that boxing match." So now money coming in on you as well.
And so CD sent in a...
crying laughing face.
Yeah, you're going to be crying, CD. All right, I need to stop challenging listeners. I need to stop threatening listeners with violence.
Goodness. I'd pay a lot
watch
of money
yourself.
To watch
your back, CD.
Heads up, CD. Watch out. Joe, some news yesterday. Speaking of things that make you angry and potentially even violent, the 17-game NFL schedule is about to happen in the NFL. That coming out yesterday. And the reaction on social media from NFL players was, I think, about what you would expect. Alvin Kamara, very upset about the 17-game schedule. And it's not like these guys haven't known that it was coming, but now that it's about to be made official, Adrian Amos was vocal on Twitter. Darius Slay was vocal on Twitter about it as well. Lots of negative reaction from a player's perspective to the 17-game schedule. And a lot of talk yesterday about, all right, if you're going to have the 17-game schedule, why are you not going to put in another bye week at this point? Like, why are you just going, instead of going, you know, playing 16 out of 17 weeks, now going to 17 out of 18 without an additional bye week? That was a very popular topic of conversation on Twitter yesterday. So the players, very negative in their reaction, even though we all knew that this was coming. Now that it's officially going to happen, players not too happy about the 17-game schedule. They got that in common with you.
All of a sudden, I can't get anything to load on my computer, but I saw the headline that said Kamara says dumb.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a great word. A couple questions on that, though. I believe this had to be collectively bargained. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, Adrian Amos on Twitter said, yeah. I mean, we really let this happen, quote.
Yeah. So that's something to always keep in mind. I agree. I mean, look, to answer your question, Robbie, so they're adding the game, and they're not adding the bye week.
Right.
You know why? Because it's all about TV.
Sure.
Because they don't want it too early here. They don't want it too late here, et cetera, et cetera. It's all about the TV inventory. It's all about greed. It's about money. It's not about player safety. They don't give a crap about player safety. They talk about player safety because they got sued because guys were turning their brains to mush playing this game. And then they turn around and do this and, again, demonstrate how hypocritical they are, but the players, you know, are also at the table.
Yeah.
And so that's something to keep in mind. It's just like the Thursday night games. I think that that's a bad player safety move to have teams do that. But again, the players bargained to do that. And, you know, you basically sweeten the pot enough and you can get the other side to agree to do it. So you have to keep that in mind on this. All the players complaining, like, well, talk to your rep, man.
Yeah.
But it's stupid. It's terribly stupid. We don't need it. I'm not saying, like, again, it's like I'm a hypocrite if I talk about bowl games because that's one of my big things I shoot down every year is people complain about the Poulon Weed Eater Independence Bowl or the Beef O'Brady. It's like, well, it's either football or no football. Which would you prefer? Do you want more football or less football? But I think from the fan perspective, you're going back to 1978.
Yep.
This is by far in the history of the league the longest stretch of one thing. And I do. I think that individual records are cherished and mean a lot. And now they're all getting screwed up.
I agree.
This.
That's the thing that upsets me the most. Like, again, I love football. When there's more football, just from the fan and the viewer standpoint of me, I'll be watching on week 18 or whatever it is. Like, I'll be watching more football. It's just the way it is. But from the record standpoint, like, you know, getting to 2,000 yards like Derrick Henry just did, it's a big deal. I mean, it's less of a big deal now with one game added to it. I mean, throwing for 5,000 yards in the NFL, it used to be a big deal. Now it kind of happens every year. But, I mean, you're these records that we've talked about for so long and the 16-game schedule that we've had, those are way less meaningful now to me. Because, I mean, you're going to have, like, at some point, it could be Derrick Henry next year. I don't know. But, like, at some point, the single-season rushing record by Eric Dickerson is going to get broke. And does it mean anything if it's 17 games? I mean, it's interesting. This is, to me, like you said, since 1978, you've had the same amount of games on the schedule. It's become a part of watching football, 16 games, even having a perfect season. Even though it doesn't happen very often, I mean, the Patriots, they go 16-0, you find your way to the Super Bowl. Like, those records, I think, are sacred in the NFL, and now you've got to view them through an entirely different lens.
And yeah, and it's just, look, I didn't even really like the move to expand the playoffs, but I thought it worked out pretty – I mean, like the triple header.
It's pretty good.
It was pretty good. So that's fine. I think playoff expansion gets out of hand too. Like in baseball, I think it's way out of hand. You know? I think that some things you need to try to keep a little bit close to tradition – but fine, add another team to the playoffs, that's fine. This is just – it's just stupid. And again, like even – I mean the jokes about Jeff Fisher, you know, there's no more 8-8 coaches ever in the history of the league, you know.
Does this mean Jeff Fisher Day is now August 9th or September 8th? Something that we need to figure out.
Well, but
– I go August 9th.
Well, his time –
yeah.
His time remains. He remains in a time capsule of 8-8. So it's still August 8th,
look,
right?
He's putting his name out there all over the place. He could get back into coaching.
That's true.
I think at one point he was willing to accept like the Ellis Middle School coaching job in Hendersonville.
Really?
Just throw it out there. Yeah.
Runner up for
he's
that?
He's trying to get back in there.
By the way, totally off topic, did you guys see that Matt Figger left Austin Peay?
Yeah.
For you. UTRVG.
Yeah, there's a lot of letters in there. Yeah.
That's an interesting not move up, I don't think. But anyway. So actually, this is great. The tweet from Kamara is actually better than even the headline. It's bleep dumb as hell.
Yes.
good for you.
Yeah, that was generally the reaction from NFL players yesterday on social media. And look, I think – the other part about this is we know it's not the final step. Like, they're going to get to 18 games at some point. Like, I don't know if it's going to be 5 years from now or 10 years from now or when it's going to be. But at some point, they're going to get to 18 games. And if you don't have an additional bye week tossed in for an 18-game schedule, if you're a player, like, how could you let that happen? Like, that's got to be something that you stand your ground on. Because they're going to get there at some point. Like, 18 games is going to happen. You've got to find a way to have multiple bye weeks here.
No question. So Torrey Smith tweets, you know, 17 games is great for money, but they're going to have to adjust practices and what a regular offseason looks like. Dudes were already falling apart playing 16.
Yeah.
End quote. So George Atala, who's part of the NFLPA, tweets, there will be automatic changes to the offseason and in-season workout schedules as a result. And that's fine, but like, It's like what you hear from guys. I mean, just if you're around an NFL team that goes through this season, by the end, everybody's hurt. A lot of guys aren't even practicing, and it's the games that get you. I mean, they've done so much to scale back practices. You know, it's when you are flying around on those Sundays. You can adjust the workouts and take contact out of practice altogether if you want. And it's still every time out is is a massive collision injury event.
It absolutely is. So it's just going to be interesting to see how they monitor that. What you're worried about, I think, if you're an NFL fan, is does the quality of play in the playoffs get affected by this? Like, are guys more injured than they typically would be? Are guys unavailable that typically would be available heading into the week? Because you got to remember, it's not even just adding another game. You've also taken a bye away from one team in the playoffs, too. It's just one team in each conference that gets the bye. So there's been more rest involved in the past for more teams, maybe some time for players to heal up. And now in more ways than one, you've taken that away from some teams, unless you're the top seed, you can still get that bye, but you're talking about one team in each conference at that point.
Yeah, and you don't want fewer great players playing in these games.
Exactly. So we knew it was going to happen, and now it is about to become official in the NFL that the 17-game schedule appears to be taking place this year. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation on the NFL and look ahead to the draft and how it relates to the Tennessee Titans as well. We'll do that next, but right now, I got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook, and there's always that one team that ruins your bracket. This year, it's been several teams that that's taken place with, and that's why this year I've been betting the tournament on FanDuel Sportsbook, America's number one sportsbook, because on FanDuel, your first bet is risk-free, and it doesn't matter if you're betting on a team like Gonzaga or a team like UCLA. New users get up to $1,000 in site credit back if your first bet doesn't win, and FanDuel's got odds on all the action with games day and night, an easy-to-use app, multiple deposits and fast withdrawals, and always-on promotions. Your next chance to win with FanDuel is only minutes away. So if that's not enough, FanDuel also wants to make you a millionaire. I'm talking to you. They're giving away $1 million to one lucky bettor, and new and existing users get an additional shot at the payout every single day that you bet on the tourney. So if you want a shot at becoming a millionaire or even a thousandaire, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Just use promo code ROB so they know that I sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. You must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply for $1 million drawing. Risk-free offer for first online real money wager only. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 14 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. 102.5 The Game is kicking off every weekend with some free beer.
Free beer!
And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. The weekly wonderful trivia question from Ryan Porth taking place on Friday. We're already looking forward to it. Preparation has already begun for Ryan Porth. The research, another great trivia question. So we'll have that coming up for you on Friday. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Talking all things NFL draft, and Joe, you did an interesting exercise at The Athletic where you basically did an entire draft, a mock draft for the Titans, all seven rounds, which Godspeed to you going through the entire drafting process. That's impressive dedication on your part.
Nine picks.
That's a lot of picks.
Nine.
You're going deep in some prospects.
Yeah. And, well, if you look at if you look at the story on theathletic.com, you will see the picture.
Yeah, very unsurprising picture.
I picked that photo.
I'm sure yes. You did.
Oh, wait a minute. You know what? Looked like Mitch Light changed my photo. Come on, Mitch. I had a sweet picture of Rondale Moore like lighting up Ohio State. Everybody remembers that game, I would assume, from his freshman year, 2018.
Oh, yeah.
It's a long time ago. Just lighting up Ohio State. I had a great picture of an Ohio State tackler like diving to the ground. And Mitch changes it to, like, him against Rutgers. I don't care that he had a good run against Rutgers.
We're talking about Ohio State here.
Come on, Mitch.
Well, I
put my editor on blast.
I'm not surprised that you've taken Rondale Moore in this draft.
Well, that's
I'm surprised that you didn't take him in the first round.
That's the larger point. You know darn well that I'm going to draft Rondale Moore in my little fantasy draft.
That's right.
So, yes, Rondale Moore. I guess I probably can't sit here and, like, say every pick.
No.
But yes, I will tell you Rondale Moore, and I'll tell you too, I was probably a little bit optimistic with my first round pick based on, you know, when he runs a 4.39, 41.5-inch vertical. J.C. Horn of South Carolina to me is, I think, a coveted player.
Yeah.
Not, hey, maybe John Robinson and Mike Vrabel went to his pro day and came away saying, I don't know about that. Nah.
I doubt it.
Let's go work with Trey Smith a little bit on some hand placement.
Yeah.
By the way, did you see Vrabel's tweet? That was pretty great.
Yes, that was pretty good.
That was pretty great.
Yes.
Calling out Luan, saying, hey, we're out here looking for players.
Even left tackles.
Left tackles. And he did the little eye emoji. Yeah, Vrabel. Vrabel's a little more young and hip than we give him credit for, huh?
Vrabel just scoping the mean streets of Twitter.
Yeah, he never tweets, but
see, he's on there.
Yeah. Anybody who uses the little eye emoji.
Or watch out.
Uh-huh. You know he knows what he's doing. But, yeah, I think that, you know, Vrabel Robinson were there. They've been barnstorming, going around to pro days. And I look at this draft and the Titans situation. I feel like if they're sticking or going to be around there, I think corners is the way to go. And I think Greg Newsome is probably a good backup. And look, they may like him better than Horn. But Horn is an intriguing player for sure. Joe Horn's kid, of course. Playing for an okay team. He got torched by those Bama guys. But, you know.
Get in line.
Yeah, get in line. I mean, Christian Fulton had some great snaps against those Bama guys and some bad ones. I mean, you play that position in that league, you're going to have some bad moments. But, you know, the big thing for J.C. Horn, he just totally, not just shut down Seth Williams of Auburn, but, like, pushed him around, yeah, too. And he's really good at pressing. And so if that's something the Titans want to do more, want to get more aggressive, I think J.C. Horn would be perfect.
Well, we had Jim Nagy on a couple of weeks ago just talking about J.C. Horn, but also he brought up Newsome on his own as well and talked about how those two guys may be his favorite two corners in the draft. So it's interesting. Like, J.C. Horn's getting a lot of pub right now, and maybe he is gone by 22, but if Newsome's there, still could get a really good player at cornerback with the first-round pick.
Right. I mean, most people have projected, you know, Caleb Farley from Virginia Tech, who now has the back thing, which kind of throws him into question a little bit, and then Patrick Surtain as the top two.
Yep.
But maybe J.C. Horn is, you know, I don't know. I don't know how much his pro day moves him up. I know that a lot of pro day 40 times look awfully good.
They did. And pro day, I think, a little bit more tilted towards your success as well. But I mean, Zach Wilson slinging the ball around the other day at BYU. Dan Orlovsky was just in awe on Twitter about Zach Wilson and his pro day. So the pro days can help you a lot if you're set up the right way.
Speaking of eye emojis, I think Orlovsky tweeted like 20 eye emojis during that pro day.
Yeah, he was fired up about it.
Like all in one tweet, or he kept tweeting them?
I think he had multiple tweets with 20 eye emojis. Yeah. I'm exaggerating, but he's a big fan.
I'm shocked that Zach Wilson impressed on his pro day.
Yes.
So, by the way, Jets are going to take him? Is that what we're thinking here?
Probably.
And meanwhile, the Niners make a huge move here.
Yeah.
And get into the third spot.
Do we think they're taking quarterback? They've said no. They said Jimmy's their guy this year.
Well, no, but that's not a no. They said Jimmy's their guy, but yes, they're going to take a quarterback.
Yes.
And I know a lot of people look at that and be like, well, that's just crazy. No way. But I mean, that is actually how the NFL has been for most of its history, you know, that you don't just immediately lean on. I mean, this is a team that's built to win.
Yeah.
So how does Jimmy G react to, you know, now some people say, well, maybe it'll be a more like ready guy like Mac Jones, if that's truly what he is.
Mac Jones moving up to third, huh?
Yeah, I have a hard time buying that. But I think that right now, I think they're going to draft a QB, and they're going to have Jimmy G this year. And basically, you can prove yourself. You know, I mean.
Going the Mahomes route.
Yeah, it worked out okay for them.
It did.
You know, redshirting, how many guys have redshirted and have become great quarterbacks? Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, there's three, along with Mahomes. It kind of works out for you if you can make it happen.
Who's the third quarterback that's going to be taken? Because right now it seems pretty clear that Lawrence is number one and Zach Wilson is going to be the number two quarterback. Is it going to be Trey Lance? Is it going to be Justin Fields? Does somebody else move up? I don't know. I mean, that's to me an interesting question. I mean, Trey Lance, you're playing at a really small school and the quality of competition is not great, but everybody that's out there says he's going to be a really good player at the NFL level. Like, I'm interested to see who that number three quarterback would be.
I found the timing of that draft pick trade a palooza on Friday interesting, coming right after the Zach Wilson pro day where the Niners trade up to number three.
Yeah.
And if they're trading up to number three to get Zach Wilson because they loved his pro day so much, they may not even get him at number three.
No. I think that they know that the Jets are going to take him too. So I don't know who it will be, but man, I would make it Justin Fields, you know? I just think the ceiling for him
is... We think he's being slept on a little bit in this draft.
Yeah,
like even when it comes to Zach Wilson. And, you know, Trey Lance, I think, is a different category. But even, like, Zach Wilson, he looks really good. And you ask Chris Sims, he's like an Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes combo quarterback. So that's, I think you'll take that if you're the Jets. But do we feel like maybe people are sleeping on Justin Fields a little bit too much?
I do. And again, I think it's like, I think there's so much emphasis on, can you come right in right now and go?
Yeah.
And how many guys can actually do that? So I think that there's, because to me, Justin Fields is not, he's had 2 years as a starter, and that's one, like, half year, right?
Yeah.
So there's still a long way to go to hit his ceiling, and it is high. It is really high. So if someone else right now, like, again, so Matt Jones, I saw that thrown around a lot after the trade. Well, they're going to get rid of Jimmy G, and so who is the quarterback who's most ready to come right in? And I don't know if it really is Matt Jones or not. I guess you could say he's more polished. He looked great in that offense. My gosh, it'd be hard not to. He's very good. And I think he's probably a first-round pick. But that's – I mean, I'd rather take the QB who is going to grow into being like a perennial all-pro. Maybe. We don't know anything. I mean, all these guys can be busts. I think Justin Fields has the potential to be a great quarterback in the
NFL. Well, and a lot of how this conversation goes to is the situation that you land in. And think about this now. You're going from Jacksonville at number one, which we all know Trevor Lawrence is going to go there. I don't think it's a great situation with that franchise. I'm not convinced Urban Meyer is a great situation either. Then the Jets, that kind of speaks for itself, even though I do like the coaching hire that they made. And then the 49ers, who were injury-riddled last year. I think Kyle Shanahan's a really good coach. Like, you could be really good this year if you're San Francisco and you stay healthy. You've got to get better quarterback play, and Jimmy G's got to be better. But, I mean, Jimmy G wasn't, you know, phenomenal a couple of years ago, and they found their way to the Super Bowl. That roster is really, really good. So the situation, it's not like the number three overall pick this year that you're going to an awful situation like you typically would be. Like, the Niners could be really good again in the NFC next year. If they stay healthy.
No doubt. Now, if I'm a Niners fan, I understand the fan perspective of, can we get a major difference maker somewhere else then?
Right.
And try to win it this year and just go with Jimmy? Like, I understand the whole...
Like, they need a receiver.
If you're drafting for the future QB, right. And you could get all kind, but boy, you didn't move up to three to get one of those receivers, right?
Unless you just love
Jamar Chase. Yeah, but... So I get that, too. I mean, that's how you look at it these days is, okay, either you're going with the rookie on the – or the quarterback on the rookie contract, or if you have someone who – I mean, Jimmy G was one bad throw from winning the Super Bowl for them, right? He missed that throw.
Yep.
You take one throw that he hits, and they win that game. It's interesting, too, how the whole – the McVay, Shanahan, they've gotten to Super Bowl with two guys, which a lot of teams around this league would love to get the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And would think pretty highly of their QB if they did, but they've both upgraded. And I get it, but I think the Niners, with Jimmy G, with those guys healthy, because they were so banged up, especially offensive skill, I think that they could Bosa back and all. I mean, they could be awfully good.
When we come back, we'll continue the discussion on the draft and how it relates to the Tennessee Titans and ask the question, how early is too early for the Titans to begin looking at the tight end position? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When the Preds have a weekday game this season, it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. If you guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the game that night, you'll win a prize pack. The next chance to participate is tomorrow morning at 8:45, which I'm sure everyone is just anticipating greatly.
Cannot
see
wait.
Who I'll pick.
Cannot wait to see you pick Eric Holla tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, looking good. Mute.
Now I'm just not going to talk.
Okay.
What did I have last week? What was my total last week?
I didn't keep a running tally, but it wasn't, that great. Yeah.
All week?
Yeah. Two or three. You're already off to a good start this week.
Got one. I was just going to not rip you on Preg's 50 Click. Now I will. You suck.
Thank you. Can't wait to see who I pick tomorrow. We'll see how that goes. You'll have your opportunity as a listener at 8:45.
6510 still, right?
Yeah.
6510.
6510.
Man.
I hold up the zero. Let's see how that goes.
The mighty poureth with one.
Yes. What a guy. Talking Titans right now, taking your reaction on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Joe Rexroad has come out with a complete 7-round mock draft for the Titans at the Athletic. And the question that I think is a very interesting one for the Titans in here is, with the needs that you have at wide receiver, at cornerback, and now with Jonnu Smith gone at tight end, how early is too early to start looking at tight end? Because we've thrown out different examples in the past. I mean, he found George Kittle, I believe, in the 5th round. Travis Kelce, I believe, was a 3rd round selection. Jonnu Smith was a 3rd round selection. So you can find some really good tight ends later in the draft. But obviously, right now, you look at the offense, that's a pretty big need for the Titans and a glaring hole for the Titans now that Jonnu Smith is not there. So my question to you, Joe Rexroad, is when you balance the hole that's left behind with Jonnu Smith with the needs on other parts of the roster, how early is too early to start looking at tight end if you're the Titans?
Tight end's a weird position, I think, in this draft. And I think that there's one tight end, and this is not who I had the Titans picking, but there's one tight end who I think has, you know, at the top end of the draft, who has everything you want, and that would be Pat Freiermuth of Penn State. Yeah, anybody who has watched him play, you know, he's
obviously besides Kyle Pitts.
Well, Kyle, yeah, I'm not even.
Yeah,
well,
that's not going to happen.
But honestly, with Kyle Pitts, even, I mean, Kyle Pitts is basically like the hybrid slot receiver tight end, right? And just a ridiculous one at that. But for the Titans, from the Titans' perspective, I could see them being more interested in like a block first tight end as TE1. Yep. You know? Like, so for example, Tommy Tremble from Notre Dame, who is big, powerful. Some people think he's by far the best blocking tight end in the whole draft. You know, mid-round kind of guy. Not a ton of, I mean, he was Notre Dame's number 2 tight end. So not a ton of receiving production, but maybe a guy who fits this team. Now, the guy I threw in there for them to pick was the 3rd round, and Brevin Jordan of Miami, who is a very talented pass catcher. I mean, 38-576, 15.2 per catch, 7 touchdowns this year, but not known as a great blocker. So, and that's a, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough call. Now, I feel like a guy like that could improve, because you are allowed to come in the NFL and work at things and improve. This does happen.
Not a popular concept.
People don't think it does, yeah, but it does happen. So, I mean, I think maybe I would opt for the guy who has demonstrated some serious downfield ability and try to work on the blocking versus the other way around, but I don't know.
Well, it's not like when Jonnu Smith came into the league, like he was just this mauler on the line. Like, no, he was really good at receiving.
He got a lot better.
He could catch some passes, but he had to work to be able to play in this offense and to be able to block. Like, that was an ongoing process. Now, he got to the point where he's really good at it by the time his Titans career ended here. But that was not like it was a day one Jonnu Smith came in and you're like, oh, look at this guy. He can hang in there and block really well.
Well, it's like Mykole Pruitt, who, until he signs somewhere else, and if he has and I missed it, I apologize, but I don't think he has.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
Until he does, I still think there's a chance he ends up back here. But there's an example of a guy who came into the league as a big-time receiving guy who, when he was in Houston and Vrabel was there and he was on the practice squad, basically like to stay in the league, he had to work his butt off to become a good blocker. And he became a good enough blocker that the Titans grabbed him when Delanie Walker broke his ankle in that 2018 opener, and he's really been a really nice pickup for the last 3 seasons. So there's another example. I mean, you can – that's why I think I would drift toward the guy with demonstrated receiving production. But again, Tommy Tremble, that guy could, you know, in the right situation with opportunities, maybe end up being a nice pass catching tight end too. Certainly, a crusher at that position is nice for this offense.
Well, it is, and especially when you factor in that, I mean, Anthony Firkser is a good player. I'm not sure that high-level blocker would be the way to describe Anthony Firkser at this point. So you don't want him to lose out on that totally. You go out and bring in a tight end that not very good at blocking, can receive really well, and you feel good about that, but you need to have some blocking from that position. Like, it can't just be Jeff Swaim out there blocking all the time.
Yeah, I mean, they love to go two tight end. You got to have – I mean, I think that they had enough with Pruitt and Swaim and Janu. I mean, but so now two of those three are gone.
Right.
So there are other guys, too. I mean, there's other guys on this roster who are more on the inline, variety. Parker Hesse, I think I'm saying his name right. Tommy Hudson, those guys have kind of, been practice squad, things like that. I mean, you can find tight ends. You can find people who can block. But I do think that this draft, there's a lot of things to invest in, but I think a tight end who can play this year is worth going pretty high for.
I think it is too. And obviously with Jonnu Smith gone, that's a big hole. Like, I think Ryan Tannehill is very comfortable with Anthony Firkser, and I still think he's going to be a big part of the passing game this year. But it's a shame we didn't get to see, I think, Jonnu Smith to his full potential last season, because if I'm Todd Downing and you bring in the right guy and you can get back to being really dangerous at tight end, to me that's a big point of this offense. Like, it's obvious at this point A.J. Brown is going to command a lot of attention. You've got to find somebody to go over the middle and be a threat, especially like if you get through the draft and you don't really find that guy that's excellent in the slot. Like, you don't necessarily have to if you're the Titans, but it would sure be nice to have somebody that you feel really good about going over the middle, whether that's Anthony Firkser, whether you add to that with another pick in the draft at the tight end position as well. Like, you've got to have your quarterback be able to work the middle of the field. I mean, that's an essential part of this offense.
Yes. Now, you put Rondale Moore in the slot.
Yeah, buddy.
Watch out. Who's tackling him ever? Probably no one.
Rondale Moore after the catch, A.J. Brown after the catch.
I might have to get a Rondale Moore Purdue jersey.
May have to. Up in here.
Because the Titans probably won't draft him. Someone else will get him, and he'll light up the NFL, and I'll say I told you so. The Colts, that would work out, right? Hometown kid.
Hey, it's on the table. That vertical jump, 42 and a half. It's pretty good. Good.
In all seriousness with Rondale Moore, I get the, like TD brought up last week, the injury question. But honestly, he had a hamstring in 19 that cost him a lot of that season.
Right.
And last year he just opted out at first and then he came back. I mean, I don't know of any serious injuries with him other than the hammy as a sophomore.
Yeah.
I mean, another question on him is route running, but that's what Purdue did with him. I mean, he had 35 catches this year for 270 yards.
Yeah.
7.7. It was just ding, ding, ding. That's what they did with him.
Right.
Doesn't mean he can't run routes. Doesn't mean, again, a player can't improve and work on his craft and be better while in the NFL.
Well, you got him going 53rd overall. Do you think he's still there at pick 53? I think there's a chance he may not be.
Yeah, there's a chance. There's a chance he may be there for a while after that. He's one of those guys that's very hard to project. Except for me, I'm projecting him as an NFL star.
That's right. That's right. When we come back, we will switch gears and get into a little college football talk. Vanderbilt back in action this weekend. Some news on Tennessee as well. That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porther with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We have Corey Curtis coming up from News 2 to begin in the 8 o'clock hour. We'll get into the Titans and the Preds with him. Lots of Preds to get to on the show today as well. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. And Joe, some spring ball underway in the world of college football. Vanderbilt in action over the weekend with their first scrimmage of the spring and the first scrimmage of the Clark Lee era. And you saw an interesting kind of comparison or talking point on Twitter over the weekend highlighting a certain rivalry with the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Well, first of all, I was going to go to the Vanderbilt scrimmage, but I got vaccinated Friday night. Big, wild Friday night. And didn't feel great Saturday, so I didn't go.
Okay.
But I did see, and I just tweeted this, by the way, perfect timing. So I quote tweeted this. This is from, this would have been great information like during football season or like right after the game. CFB Home, at College Football Home, at CFB Home. This is the tweet. Who would you consider to be the most competitive rivalry in college football the past 10 years? Give me Vanderbilt and Tennessee. The series is tied 5-5. They both have 273 points in those 10 games. Vanderbilt has 5 bowl appearances. Tennessee has 4. As a Tennessee fan, right now I see you.
Makes me want to light my shoes on fire.
I mean, the amazing thing about that, too, is it has taken, you know, we're going to rip Jeremy Pruitt for years, but Jeremy Pruitt turned that rivalry around and won the last two handily, and it took those two for it to be even over 10 years. It took a late run from the Vols to even it up in this series. Your reaction, Tennessee fan?
That's pretty depressing. It's also, I think, very illustrative of where this Tennessee football program is right now. Because when you think about the most competitive rivalries in college football, Vanderbilt and Tennessee, not the first two names that come to mind, but when you look at the numbers, 5-5, the same exact amount of points scored, Vanderbilt will one more bowl appearance than Tennessee. I think that kind of shows you the work that Josh Heupel and company have laid out for them as they head into spring ball here in Tennessee. We talked the other day about the four freshmen that are not part of things right now in spring football. You've got to have all this talent in here and ready to go because this is, I think, a really good kind of teaching point of where this program has gotten to lately. And to your point, Jeremy Pruitt had to even this thing up. Maybe that's what he was good for at Tennessee.
Well, it's not even like it's been – I mean, I guess in 10 years you're going back to the Franklin still, right?
Yes.
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 But it's not like it's been the most amazing decade for Vanderbilt, you know? I mean, they had some good teams. Derek Mason had a couple really good teams. And they were still thumping Tennessee.
I mean, relatively speaking, it probably has been the most amazing decade for Vanderbilt football.
I suppose any decade that includes those 3 years. Yeah. 24-15 under Franklin included. But that's the very beginning of it. You know, the Derek Mason era was okay. It was a lot like the Bobby Johnson era, you know. But on the new coach front, so this is – I'm reading Adam Sparks' tweet on this from Clark Lee after the scrimmage, okay? And I want to envision Jeremy Pruitt saying this, okay?
Okay.
This is Clark Lee. Clark Lee, this is how Sparks writes this, is how Clark Lee wants to develop Vandy players. Quote, set up clearly defined systems of development and through preparation, build confidence in the moment and also discipline the mind to clear the static for the players to focus on the performance required in that moment.
Sure.
Hit him in the mouth. I need a Clark Lee... Jeremy Pruitt,
debate?
Yeah, a debate. They need to be on a reality show together.
I agree.
That's amazing stuff.
You could tell that Vanderbilt education coming out very clear in Clark Lee there.
Interesting. Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And by the way, Vanderbilt, big stuff coming today. Big stuff coming today on the Vanderbilt front. Vanderbilt fans are well aware. I mean, they've called a press conference for 10 o'clock. There will be something coming at the Athletic later today. It's a pretty significant thing that's kind of been building toward that. Meanwhile, on the Tennessee front, have you been following along with spring football so far?
Loving it.
Yeah? You're all in?
I haven't paid hardly any attention to it.
I'm very disappointed. Did you used to pay close attention?
I've never been a huge spring football guy.
Okay, well, good for you.
Because you know what happens in spring football, especially with that program? People get very excited, and they get real – look, the amount of people that used to talk to me about Marquez North and how awesome he was going to be at wide receiver for Tennessee, it never materialized. There are a lot of spring football warriors out there that don't necessarily translate – to go on the field in the fall.
Well, and especially like in the spring game,
yeah.
Depending on how a team does it, the team I used to cover for a long time, they would do a draft, so they'd kind of like try to have an even teams. But the problem is then you'll end up getting like, your sixth receiver torching your fourth cornerback, and it's like, oh, this guy. And then the next year, he's playing on special teams, you know. But Jabari Small apparently is looking good. I'm reading through David Ubbin's takeaways. Jabari Small's looking good. Offensive line, they're liking Cade Mays, Darnell Wright, Javontez Spriggins, Cooper Mays. D. Beckwith is working at running back. That's kind of interesting. Oh, really?
They like the offensive line, huh? They liked that last year, too, didn't they?
No, they did. Well, that's the thing. Anything you like in the spring means that you're doing something good at the expense of another player on your team. So does that mean the defensive line stinks? And it may. But the quarterback situation – but I will say that Tennessee's spring football is more interesting than some years just because of the – like, if like last year you knew Garantano was going to be the QB. Of course, the spring ball didn't happen anyway. But, you know, like some years – it's not as interesting. This year is interesting with new coach, new quarterbacks.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see who's the quarterback for this offense. Like, you got Hooker coming in. You got Harrison Bailey there that you still feel good about. Brian Maurer has just kind of been cast aside as an afterthought at this point, I think, by most Tennessee fans. Although I did have a Tennessee fan tell me yesterday that he thinks Brian Maurer is going to end up being the starter this year. So maybe he's a part of the equation as well. I don't know. I think this offense and the way that the players that are already there fit into it is going to be interesting. Like, how does Harrison Bailey fit into a Josh Heupel offense? To me, that's a very interesting question because he's not exactly the type of guy to me that I think of when I think of, all right, they're going to go really fast. Quarterback's going to be involved in the running game too. Like, I'm interested to see how a guy like Harrison Bailey kind of fits into that mold.
Yeah, I think with any of them, I could see him. It really is so much just who picks up the offense and makes those quick decisions best, gets the ball out accurately. I could see any of those three guys being that guy. I mean, Caden Salter, you can probably rule him out at this point. It was already a long shot even if he was part of spring ball the entire time. He would have to – because you can't – you know, you also can't give the same reps to everybody. So.
Right.
But I guess I would think Bailey or Hooker – would have a better chance than Maurer, but Maurer just seems like the guy who is not going to be consistently accurate enough on those short intermediate throws that you need to have in this offense to be the guy unless he improves. But that's kind of like your jump shot too. Like at this age, your jump shot is kind of what it is. You can improve it, but you know, like you have a jump shot form. I don't know that he's ever going to be that kind of consistent volume accurate quarterback that I think you have to have in this offense.
I think so too. And you know, it's interesting now because you look at running back, you felt great about it, and now Eric Gray's gone playing in Oklahoma. Like, who's going to be the running back? Like, there's so many questions with this offense, not just the obvious of, all right, stylistically, what's that going to look like and how effective is it going to be in an SEC schedule, but like, well, who are your weapons now on offense? You've got Velus Jones back there. You feel great about Jalen Hyatt. So, like, there are a couple of really good receivers you feel awesome about. Who's the running back going to be? I think that's a great question at this point. Ty Chandler's gone. Eric Gray's gone. There's a lot of unproven players at that position.
Yeah, Ty Chandler would be you go North Carolina?
North Carolina.
Yeah. He'd be big to have back. Maybe D. Beckwith, 6'5", 220.
It's pretty big.
Started as a tight end. That's tall for a running back, but maybe he'll be. And, of course, they have the JUCO transfer who is not here, correct?
Yep.
He's not here for spring.
Right.
And he, you know, he could end up taking charge in fall. He'll certainly get reps and get the opportunity. But, yeah, it's not comforting to have the depth chart look the way it does there.
When we come back, we will be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2, as we are each and every Monday at 8 o'clock. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans and get his thoughts on the turnaround for the Preds as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. You're on ESPN 102.5 The Game.